Until he was nearly arrived at adolescence, it did not become clear to Kipps how it was that he was under the care of an aunt and uncle, instead of having a father and mother like other boys. Yet he had vague memories of a somewhere else that was not New Romney, of a dim room, a window looking down on white buildings, and of a someone else who talked to forgotten people, and who was his mother. He could not recall her features very distinctly, but he remembered with extreme definition a white dress she wore, with a pattern of little sprigs of flowers and little bows of ribbon upon it, and a girdle of straight-ribbed white ribbon about the waist. Linked with this, he knew not how, were clouded, half-obliterated recollections of scenes in which there was weeping, weeping in which he was inscrutably moved to join. Some terrible tall man with a loud voice played a part in these scenes, and either before or after them, there were impressions of looking for interminable periods out of the windows of railway trains in the company of these two people. He knew, though he could not remember that he had ever been told, that a certain faded, wistful face that looked at him from a plush and gilt-framed daguerreotype above the mantel of the sitting-room was the face of his mother. But that knowledge did not touch his dim memories with any elucidation. In that photograph she was a girlish figure, leaning against the photographer's stile, and with all the self-conscious shrinking natural to that position. She had curly hair, and a face far younger and prettier than any other mother in his experience. She swung a Dolly Varden hat by the string, and looked with obedient, respectful eyes on the photographer gentleman who had commanded the pose. She was very slight and pretty. But the phantom mother that haunted his memory so elusively was not like that, though he could not remember how she differed. Perhaps she was older, or a little less shrinking, or, it may be, only dressed in a different way. It is clear she handed him over to his aunt and uncle at New Romney with explicit directions and a certain endowment. One gathers she had something of that fine sense of social distinctions that subsequently played so large a part in Kipps's career. He was not to go to a common school, she provided, but to a certain seminary in Hastings that was not only a middle-class academy, with mortarboards and every evidence of a higher social tone, but also remarkably cheap. She seems to have been animated by the desire to do her best for Kipps, even at a certain sacrifice of herself, as though Kipps were in some way a superior sort of person. She sent pocket money to him from time to time for a year or more after Hastings had begun for him, but her face he never saw in the days of his lucid memory. His aunt and uncle were already high on the hill of life when first he came to them. They had married for comfort in the evening, or at any rate in the late afternoon of their days. They were at first no more than vague figures in the background of proximate realities, such realities as familiar chairs and tables, quiet to ride and drive, the newel of the staircase, kitchen furniture, pieces of firewood, the boiler tap, old newspapers, the cat, the high street, the backyard, and the flat fields that are always so near in that little town. He knew all the stones in the yard individually, the creeper in the corner, the dustbin and the mossy wall, better than many men know the faces of their wives. There was a corner under the ironing board, which by means of a shawl could, under propitious gods, be made a very decent cubby house. A corner that served him for several years as the indisputable hub of the world. And the stringy places in the carpet, the knots upon the dresser, and the several corners of the rag hearthrug his uncle had made became essential parts of his mental foundations.